quiet CDC weekend update shows a shockingly small number of people died only from COVID. Taiwan is not taking any chances against the red threat from China with a massive military bolster. The EU takes a strong stand against Turkish aggression against Greece and the Mediterranean. We hit the headlines from all across the world and Mission Mondays on deck. Welcome to World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Monday, August 31st, 2020 edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, and let me tell you, as an American, as most of my audience is American, I stayed up kind of late. I took a break from the news. I do that. Maybe this wasn't the weekend to do that, but I did. And I knew stuff was going on, but wow, when I got on last night to kind of prepare for the week, kind of get back into the news cycle, I just couldn't believe the amount of news from around the U.S. of people getting killed, the riots, the burning, the looting. So much that is going on. Trump's going to be visiting Kenosha, Wisconsin on Tuesday. And of course, the politicians there don't want him to come. The Portland mayor doesn't want him to do this open letter to Trump. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's a really sad state of affairs in these cities. I believe all of this and the polling data is showing it. All of it is moving towards Trump's advantage and is only going to make his victory that much larger in November. But it's really, really sad that that happened as a result of people dying in these truly despicable acts. Make sure you go to cgmradio.com for the stories that we talk about in this broadcast, as well as other U.S. news. We're trying to keep that page updated daily with the headlines that are discussed on the CGM radio shows, on those broadcasts, as well as any others that we find relevant and important. So again, I'm fully aware of all of that that is going on. But of course, I'm going to be focusing on the broader world news, although there is a big, big story, as mentioned in the intro, about what happened with the CDC over the weekend. It's big, highlighted in red at cgmradio.com. So be sure to head over there, check that out, and read all about it. And we're going to get into it in just a minute. But first, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. You can do that by going to cgmradio.com/world. You can also type in World News CGM in your favorite podcasting app. Follow me on Twitter and Parler at World News CGM. And of course, send me an email, world@cgmradio.com. Let's talk about this stunning development over the weekend at the CDC. Obviously, a lot of us have been very concerned about the actions taken by the federal government at times, actions taken by state governments, especially as states such as California, New York, Minnesota, and others have just sought to severely lock the state down and really without blinking, taken away people's constitutional rights, as the governor of New Jersey did when he said several months ago that we didn't think about people's constitutional rights when we implemented our COVID policies. I mean, that's how you have an elected official who doesn't think about that is beyond imaginable. But such is the case. And a lot of us have felt like, and I have really since April, I felt like there should be a much more nuanced approach to how we handle COVID, because it became increasingly obvious that this was not the Black Death. This was not the plague. This was not even, as JP from JP's Political Matrix is going to be talking about in his show tomorrow, it's not even, you know, you take the tuberculosis numbers from 2015, where you had 10 million people worldwide that got tuberculosis and 1.5 million people died. I mean, those are staggering numbers. Those are extremely concerning numbers. But you look at the number of people who have died from from COVID, especially when you look at, when you extract out the comorbidities and you take people that just died from COVID, and you're going to see, you're going to see a stark difference between the bill of goods of what we've been told and what is actually happening. Remember, this all started as the Gateway Pundit documents very carefully. And again, that article is linked at cgmradio.com and big bold red, so be sure to check that out. But as this all started because the WHO director, who's planted there by China, initially said that this was, we're looking at a 3.4% death rate. I mean, that, and look, that is enormous. Now, it's, that's not the Black Death, where it was 1 in 3, right, in Europe in the 1300s. It wasn't that, but still 3.4%, you know, 34 out of, I'm sorry, you know, 3.5 out of every 100 people, 34 out of every 1,000 people, that's enormous. And, you know, and in a situation like that, or a situation like the Black Death, we're not actually going to be real worried about all of our constitutional rights. We're everybody's just attempting to survive and stay alive. But in a situation like what we saw happen over the weekend, because what the CDC numbers now are about 170,000 deaths from COVID. And look, we don't know what the actual COVID death rates are. We actually don't know what they are. Or maybe we do now. Maybe we do better now, because remember, officials have come out and said, we just mark everything as a COVID death, whether they have comorbidities or not. They haven't hid that. They've come out and said that. You can get find quotes from them saying that with a 5-second Google search, or DuckDuckGo search, I should rather say. I'm pretty done with Google. But townhall.com explains this pretty succinctly, concisely, and straightforwardly. Here's the shockingly small number of people who died from only the coronavirus. This is from Bronson Stalking. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website disclosed the shockingly small number of people who died from only the Wuhan coronavirus, with no other cause of death mentioned. Hold on to your hats, because here it is. Out of the 161,392 deaths in the CDC data, just 6%, about 9,700 deaths, were attributed to the coronavirus alone. 9,700. According to the CDC, the other 94% had an average of 2.6 additional conditions or causes of deaths, such as heart disease, diabetes, and sepsis. And you can look at the table updated August 26, where they say comorbidities. For 6% of deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. This is the CDC website, now I'm reading from. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID-19, on average, there were 2.6 additional conditions or causes per death. The number of deaths with each condition or cause is shown for all deaths and by age groups. So what this shows... a few things. Number one, obviously, the WHO was just completely wrong, and they are we do not want to entrust them with a dime. They are not who we need to entrust our lives with. Thank you. Yes, we need to work with other nations. We need to work with other nations for sure during something like this. But the WHO is just completely inept, out of touch. Secondly, it shows that the lockdown measures, which, by the way, there was I was reading in an article in the Epoch Times, you know what, I need to make sure to add that article to the site. But just going through all the mental health crises that people are facing because of the lockdown, we've known this from the beginning. You've got these mental health experts coming out and saying that suicidality, depression, and of course there's the domestic abuse situations that have just skyrocketed through the whole lockdowns. And we're doing this over something where the only 9,700 people since this thing began died from COVID only, which obviously that's still too many. But if you look at how many people die from the flu each year, it is a fraction. 15%, 10%, depending on the year. What, are we going to lock down the country every 6 months, every year because of the flu? Because with that logic, that's essentially what they're saying that we need to do. This is insane. Our whole policy needs to change now. And it's the policy that should have been there from the beginning, which is those with serious underlying conditions need to quarantine, and those without that need to be able to live their lives. You say, well, what about the 9,700? I would say, what about the 60,000, 70,000, 80,000 that die from the flu? What about the 300,000 that die from car wrecks? I mean, we could do this all day. The reality is that a part of life is risk of death. Like, you can't live life without the risk of death. That's why I love that that statement from the that quote from The Hobbit, where, you know, it's or Lord of the Rings. It's a dangerous thing, you know, Frodo to walk out your front door. You never know where your feet will keep your feet. You don't know where they'll be swept off to. I mean, there's all kinds of, it's sad, but that such is the world we live in. All of us are at risk of death. I mean, not only that, but the ultimate statistic, right? 10 out of 10 died. That's just, it's just reality. And we can't lock down the country, which then creates all these other problems, all these other issues, by someone being trapped in their home for months on end. Even nursing home patients that are dying of loneliness, are dying of just not being able to see friends and family in their last days on earth, are isolated in their nursing homes. The whole thing is sad. So this right here, if we're taking the CDC numbers as gospel, then this right here, we should completely change our strategy. If we look CDC, 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 all these deaths, okay, fine. Let's look at the CDC numbers, and we need to change our strategy big time. How can we continue to keep the nation locked up? And not only that, but the financial crisis. You have a crisis of religious liberty and freedom of speech, where you have governors such as Newsom in California attempting to silence churches and stop them from singing to God. That one there is more telling than anything, that there are nefarious purposes. And look, there have been nefarious purposes at work in California for a long time. I remember a long time ago, they began to ban home Bible studies because of zoning. So yeah, we can get together for a football game every week, but we can't get together for a Bible study every week. I mean, so California needs a revolution. I believe the revolution is coming. All of this, everything that we see happening, from the riots, the burning, the looting, the insane leftist governors and mayors, I can't believe for a second that all of it is not going to result in an incredible backlash this November, whenever these goons come up for election again. I can't believe that. So I wanted to start off the broadcast with that, because that is some big, 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 big news. But now let's head over to hitting the world headlines. America first. Oregon State Police returning to Portland following fatal shooting. Fox News, Oregon State Police were returned to Portland to assist local officers after a man was fatally shot amid clashes between supporters of President Trump and Black Lives Matter protesters. Governor Kate Brown announced the decision in a statement Sunday, which is part of a six-point plan that she said would, quote, protect free speech and bring violence and arson to an end in Portland. She said the nearly 100 days of protests have stretched the Portland Police Bureau's resources thin, and that additional local and state personnel, as well as federal resources, will give the police bureau, quote, the investigative capacity to arrest and charge those individuals who have engaged in violent or destructive acts and endangered public safety. Quote, as done previously, Oregon State Police will detail personnel and resources to Portland to free up the Portland Police Bureau's investigative capabilities to arrest and charge those engaging in violent acts. OSP troopers will continue their standard practice of wearing body cameras to allow for the documentation of their activities. Under the plan, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office will prosecute serious criminal offenses, including arson and physical violence. Meanwhile, the Sheriff's Office will work with other agencies to hold people booked for violent behavior and ensure that there is adequate jail space to hold such individuals, according to the statement. So much for abolishing prisons. So much for defunding police. They're actually going to use the police to quell and stop the rioters and the looters. Don't use them. If people are peacefully protesting, even if I totally disagree, that's fine. They have that right to do so. But the violence and the looting go. And look, they got the memo. Don Lemon gave them the memo last week. You know, people, it's actually not very popular amongst people to see their cities go up in flames, to see their businesses go up in flames, minority businesses go up in flames, to see people being killed by these rioters and looters. Even though you have Antifa and BLM supporters on video celebrating that stuff, which you can, we have links to that at cgmradio.com, which is really, really, really sad. This is a very, very, very bad group of people. Now, in contrast, you do look at the march on Washington on Friday. As far as I know, that was mostly peaceful. However, I did see Eric Trump tweet out a picture of that and go, okay, great. Now we can have in-person voting. If you're going to say that that's allowed, thousands and thousands of people congested in an area in Washington, and then say we can't go socially distance into a voting booth with a mask and vote, then you are being just categorically dishonest and hypocritical to the extreme. Neck and neck, polling in battleground states is closer than it was in 2016. Big League Politics, an aggregate of state polls and the most crucial polls in the 2020 election reveal that the election is even closer than the 2016 presidential election. Hillary Clinton led in an average swing state polls by 4.6% on August 30th, 2016, whereas Joe Biden leads by only a razor-thin margin of 2.7%. today, which I don't even believe the polls, but the fact that we are, that's 2 percentage points difference. That is huge. Real Clear Politics counts Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Arizona as their top battleground swing states and has averaged the polling index of every poll taken in the states on a rolling basis. The polling aggregate also doesn't take swing states such as Minnesota into account. The Trump campaign has increasingly targeted the reliably blue state, which has voted for a Democrat in every presidential election since 1972, with many residents of the states sick of the damages inflicted by Black Lives Matter race rioters into their community. The latest Trafalgar Group poll shows the president leading by 47% to 45% in Michigan, representing the reversal of a 10% lead on the part of Joe Biden. Some pollsters had claimed their surveys were demonstrating. Look, if we get Minnesota and if Trump gets Minnesota and Michigan, it's over. it's over. And if he gets 20% plus of the black vote, it's over. So we're going to be watching that. But the fact that it's this close shows me that in reality, Trump is way ahead. And if the election were held today and it was a fair election, Trump would win. But that is, of course, why the left wants to blanket the U.S. with mail-in voting. And Hillary Clinton has said that no matter what happens election night, Biden should not concede the election, that he should simply just not concede and let this drag on because it's going to take a long time for all these mail-in ballots to come in. And of course, they're going to need all that extra time to create fake ballot as well. So we know Trump would win if the election were held today and fairly. So I think that's why that Trump needs more, just a landslide, that even if we are waiting on mail-in ballots in California, New York, and these other places, that he's swept the Electoral College, and so it really doesn't even matter. Israel. A Star of David adorned LI plane flew from Israel to the UAE on Monday, carrying a high-ranking American and Israeli delegation to Abu Dhabi in the first ever direct commercial passenger flight between the two countries. The Israeli flag carries flight marked the implementation of the historic U.S. broker deal to normalize relations between the two nations and solidifies the long clandestine ties between them that have evolved over years of shared enmity toward Iran. The American delegation included President Donald Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law Jared Kushner, as well as National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien. Israel was represented by National Security Advisor Meir Ben Shabbat and other top officials. Iran's central bank said on Saturday it was taking legal steps to counter a lawsuit filed in a U.S. court by creditors seeking to seize $1.7 billion of its assets held by Deutsche Börse Clearstream unit. The German stock exchange said earlier the creditors had filed the suit in a New York court seeking to require Clearstream to surrender assets that allegedly belong to Iran's central bank. It said the clearinghouse considers the claims to be unfounded and will take steps to defeat them. Emir Hossein Taib Fard, a deputy governor of the Iranian central bank, said in a statement, quote, after repeated legal defeats in Luxembourg, the U.S. plaintiffs are seeking legal action in U.S. courts against Clearstream. Serious legal action is also underway to counter these measures. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think a lot of people are wanting damages from Iran for all of the their aggression and violence. Taiwan. In recent weeks, Taiwan's president Tsai Ing-wen has unveiled her self-ruled island's largest ever military budget and pledged closer security cooperation with the U.S. and other democracies, and we're going to get into this story a little deeper after we're done with the headlines. China. A Chinese military-linked researcher was caught by U.S. authorities at the airport attempting to flee to China with highly advanced computer code he stole from a U.S. university that could be used for underwater robots and aircraft engines, according to the FBI. U.S. Customs and Border Protection stopped Hu Heizu, a researcher from the University of Virginia's Department of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering, discovered to also work for a Chinese military-linked university, too. How about that? What a coincidence. Before he could board a flight to Qingdao, China, from Chicago's O'Hare's International Airport on Tuesday, said an FBI special agent in an 11-page affidavit filed on Friday in federal court in Virginia. This is treason, folks. This is treason. You can't do this. You can't steal information from the U.S. and give it to the Chinese Communist Party or any other country in the world for that matter. According to the agent, Matthew Rader, CBP investigators questioned Hu and searched his electronic devices, which revealed UVA research-related files stored on his laptop, including, quote, bio-inspired research simulation software code. Bio-inspired research simulation software code developed by, quote, Professor One. Hey, any of you screenwriters out there, you've got a great foundation here for a thriller flick, spy flick. Bio-inspired research relates to studying the complexities of flying and swimming creatures in nature and applying that to manned flight or submersibles, often with military implications. Wow. Bio-inspired research relates to studying the complexities of flying and swimming creatures in nature and applying that to manned flight or submersibles. That's pretty amazing. Iraq. The Pentagon is cutting the U.S. force in Iraq to about 3,500 troops, and the neocons are screaming crazy mad because how dare we bring troops home from overseas? We must be there perpetually to support the military-industrial complex. Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. That's not what the Wall Street Journal says. I digress and continue. U.S. officials said a roughly one-third reduction that President Trump is expected to tout as progress toward winding down what he has described as endless wars. The U.S. and Iraq refrained from publicly setting a schedule for reducing the approximately 5,200 American troops now in the country when Iraq's prime minister visited Washington last week. I'm sure Iraq is likely not happy about it, but such is the situation. Several American officials said the Pentagon is cutting troop levels by roughly one-third over the next 2 to 3 months. That would bring American force levels roughly back to where they were in 2015 when the U.S. was in the early phase of its campaign against ISIS. The Pentagon confirmed the Wall Street Journal's report late Friday, quote, "We are reducing troop levels as the Iraqi capability to defeat ISIS remnants and prevent its resurgence improves," the Navy commander, Pentagon spokeswoman said. "Any reduction of U.S. forces in Iraq will be determined through careful coordination with the government of Iraq, as well as with our coalition and NATO partners, and calibrated to our shared security interests and progress in the campaign against ISIS." The Iraqi embassy didn't respond to a request for comment, which not responding speaks quite a bit. Lebanon, Hezbollah leader Syed Hassan Nasrallah said on Sunday the powerful Shiite movement was open to discussing a new political order in Lebanon if all factions agree to it, as foreign donors press for deep reforms to tackle the country's multiple crises. Quote, "France's president in his last visit called for a new political contract." Remember, Lebanon used to be a colony of France. France pulled back, it no longer is, and now many, many, many in Lebanon, your man on the street, so to speak, is very much wants France to take back control of Lebanon until things get back into order. "We're open to any calm discussion for a new political contract, but on the condition it take place with agreement from all Lebanese factions." French President Emmanuel Macron, due to visit Beirut again on Monday, has outlined reforms local politicians must make to unlock foreign aid to tackle deep financial crisis rooted in corruption and mismanagement, including an interim government capable of enacting change and early parliamentary polls. Lebanon's Maronite Patriarch Bekara Boutrous al-Rai is at the center of controversy in Lebanon after having increased his calls for the state to crack down on unauthorized weapons in the country in an apparent critique of the Lebanese terrorist group Hezbollah. Since a massive explosion destroyed the port of Beirut and killed more than 150 in the beginning of August, the Christian leader has been more outspoken. He wants elections, and he has critiqued the, quote, political class that is entrenched in power. Forgive the Freudian slip just there. Lebanon is facing a major danger, he said over the weekend. This comes as the country will need to choose a new prime minister and government, and as French President Macron is again scheduled to visit. So it's actually quite encouraging to see a Christian leader speak out and be bold against Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a terrorist group officially designated by the United States. This is not just some other political party in Lebanon. This is a violent terror group, violent Islamic terror group that Lebanon must deal with. And so it's very important that opposition groups speak out and be bold. And it's great to see their Maronite patriarch do such a thing. Belarus. European Union foreign ministers agreed to impose sanctions on senior Belarusian officials in response to what the EU called violent repression against peaceful protesters and opposition figures by the country's autocratic regime. The EU in coming days will draft a list of roughly 20 officials to face sanctions, and the roster will be extended if the government in Minsk doesn't cease its human rights violations, EU foreign ministers said after a meeting in Berlin on Friday. Belarus, a former Soviet state and a close Russian ally, has been governed by autocratic President Alexander Lukashenko for 26 years. Mr. Lukashenko has been facing unprecedented mass protests since he was elected to a sixth term on August 9th, following an election that has been dismissed as fraudulent by the EU and others, and it's great to see EU standing up to this dictator. He's being called Europe's last dictator, and I do think it does appear, given the EU being against him, given the pressure that is on him, I just simply do not think his government is going to last. Of course, I could be wrong, and we will see what happens and continue to monitor that. Africa. Mali postpones transfer of powers meeting as cracks emerge. Mali's military junta, which junta, if you're not sure, it's a council or committee for political or governmental purposes, especially after it's a revolutionary political body that exists after they've seized power. So Mali's military junta on Saturday postponed the first meeting on the transfer of power after rising tensions with the group that sparked the August 18th coup. The junta had invited civic groups, political organizations, and former rebels to consultations on Saturday, but said in a statement that the meeting was postponed at the last minute to a later date due to, quote, organizational reasons. This deal in Mali, this military coup in Mali, is going to be an absolute mess. I was reading some stuff on this, how France is really going to have to be in this and is tangled in this for the long haul. So it's not just Lebanon that France is entangled in. They are, they're all in Mali, it looks like, as well as Mali is also a former colony of France. And then there is an opinion piece on Venezuela. I'm just going to read a paragraph from it, but it's linked up at cgmradio.com. I encourage you to check it out. And it's called A U.S. Airdrop of Dollars in Venezuela. The Trump administration's efforts to block oil and gasoline shipments into and out of Venezuela are designed to force strongman Nicolas Maduro to step aside. But his supporters say the sanctions demonstrate indifference to the suffering of Venezuelans. Their argument would be more convincing if not for Mr. Maduro's persistent cruelty against his own people. It is really amazing. Trump is trying to oust the strongman dictator, trying to put in the rightfully elected leader, president, Juan Guaido. And people, oh, but the sanctions are hurting the ordinary Venezuelans. And look, and I get that. And I don't doubt that that is true to some extent. But this absolutely invalid leader of the country has seized power and is turning Venezuela into Cuba, and that's simply unacceptable. I mean, if you were in Venezuela, what would you want to happen? I would take a bit more pain if it means Maduro eventually gets out and you actually have freedom in Venezuela. Again, interestingly, also some other things I was reading that some hard left groups have actually rejected Maduro because there are several promises Maduro made to these leftist groups that he hasn't kept. So not only does he have the freedom-loving people in Venezuela against him, now he also even has leftist groups that are against him. It makes you wonder if Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar and Cortez are going to go with their leftist counterparts in Venezuela and rejecting Maduro. You can't make this stuff up. This gives me hope again that, hey, perhaps Maduro's days are numbered. Pray for Venezuela. And now let's talk. I love it. I love it. I love it when free nations flex their muscles in order to protect their freedom. Let's talk about it in Taiwan. Fearing Hong Kong's fate, Taiwan moves to bolster its military against China. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Beijing's crushing of pro-democracy forces in Hong Kong has deepened Taiwanese fear and resentment of Chinese Communist Party, injecting new energy into the island democracy's efforts to build up its military forces. Quote, after Hong Kong, Taiwan stands increasingly on the front line of freedom and democracy, Ms. Tsai said in remarks to the Australian Strategic Policy Institute broadcast online Thursday. Taiwan is strengthening its defenses, she said, because, quote, we know that in terms of our current situation, strength can be correlated with deterrence. How about that? Peace through strength can be infectious. Military tensions have climbed in the region, with China's People's Liberation Army recently conducting patrols and combat exercises that the Chinese military suggested were intended as a warning to the U.S. and Taiwan. This past week, Beijing denounced the U.S. for sending a spy plane over one of the drills, while the Pentagon voiced concern over the PLA's recent firing of ballistic missiles into the contested South China Sea. Beijing has sought to squeeze Ms. Tsai's government with economic and military pressure under Chinese leader Xi Jinping, who has reinforced Communist Party control around the country's periphery and declared that the party's goal of assimilating Taiwan can't be put off indefinitely. It's part of the One China policy. One China policy that the U.S. still is officially recognizes the idea that Hong Kong, Taiwan, all of this is part of China. It's been there, I believe, since what, Nixon? So, but look, this is the era of Trump. Nobody was willing to move the embassy to Jerusalem, but it happened. Nobody was willing to allow the Golan Heights to be, nobody wanted the Golan Heights to be annexed by Israel. It happened. The kind of things that, I mean, Trump is chucking NAFTA, you name it, all this stuff that was just standard orthodoxy of Democrats and Republicans, I think Trump is showing more and more actually how he really is more of an independent than just towing the line, or maybe he's perhaps more of a true Republican. I'm sure we can argue about that all day. The risk of armed conflict in the Taiwan Strait is low but rising. Strengthening Taiwan's defenses has been a long-standing goal for Ms. Tsai, whose ruling party advocates a Taiwanese identity separate from China. Growing fears over Chinese encroachment have lent more urgency to that effort. And here's very interesting. This is what I think has given the president of Taiwan the mandate to up defense spending. A survey conducted this spring by Taipei's Academia Sinica, a state-funded think tank, found that some 73% of respondents rejected the notion that, quote, the mainland Chinese government is Taiwan's friend. 73%. Now, it is a state-funded academic institute, so some of those numbers could be fudgy, but I don't really trust state-funded think tanks, even in Taiwan, even in free nations, but either way, it is what it is. This is what's giving her the mandate. Up from 58% a year earlier. Isn't that amazing? That is a 15-point swing in 1 year of respondents saying that they do not believe that mainland China is our friend. That's incredible. While more than two-thirds expressed support for the Hong Kong protest movement that first erupted in the summer of 2019, who are the 34% that aren't for that? Anyway, in a June survey conducted after Beijing said it planned to impose a national security law in Hong Kong, the Taiwanese Public Opinion Foundation found that about 76% of respondents felt pessimistic about Hong Kong's future. So the Taiwanese people are completely woke about the idea that China is not their friend, and they are an absolute threat to democracy. When you look at their just unbelievable human rights abuses, especially with the Uyghur Muslims, interning them in these camps, harvesting their organs, and you know Taiwan and Hong Kong, these are looking at we don't want, if they can do that to them, they can do that to us. That's what these people are thinking. And they're not okay with that. Also, last thing, Taipei in August announced that defense-related spending would jump roughly 10%. Woo! That's a big jump in 1 year. 10% to 453.4 billion new Taiwan dollars, which equates to 15.4 billion U.S. dollars next year. Its de facto envoy to Washington signaled plans to buy more American arms that can help Taiwan's 215,000 soldiers, sailors, and airmen punch above their weight against China's 2 million strong army. So this is actually, it's good news for the U.S. economically. It's good news for Taiwan in protecting their freedom, protecting their democracy, and it's good news for the world. My belief is that the more free nations that we have, the more free nations we will have. The fewer free nations that we have, the fewer free nations that we have. Now, that's one. Now you can argue whether or not we should have gone into the Vietnam War to stop communism because of the domino effect, so forth. I don't know. I don't have really any reason to think that that was actually the correct policy. But that being said, if we can help nations through either help free nations through supplying military equipment through diplomatic and economic warfare, then I think that's a worthy go. Now, let's talk about another piece of good news, because even the people that you loathe the most can surprise you. Look, I'll give credit to where credit is due. I'm not a huge fan of the EU, absolutely at all. But when I see good news, especially with stories that we're following here at World News Brief, I want to bring them up. I want to talk about them because it's important when the free world, or semi-free world at least, kind of unites together against the neighborhood bully. And in this case, of course, is the aptly named nation of Turkey. EU urges Turkey to stop drilling in Med, ponders sanctions, meaning Mediterranean. The European Union on Friday urged Turkey to halt what it called its, quote, illegal prospecting activities in contested waters in the eastern Mediterranean, and ordered EU officials to speed up work aimed at blacklisting Turkish officials linked to the energy exploration. I believe we discussed on Thursday the conflict. You know, Greece and Turkey are right next to each other with only the Aegean Sea there to separate them. And Greece, per international law, should be able to go 12 miles out for energy exploration and so forth. Turkey is not real wild about that idea. So Greece, in order to avoid conflict, is staying at six miles off their coast. So, you know, there's a conflict going on between the two of them, and the EU is actually coming to the aid of Greece, is actually standing up and having a spine and coming to the aid of Greece. Tensions are mounting between Turkey and Greece over Turkey's searching for potential gas and oil deposits near the island of Cyprus. And now Cyprus is just south of Turkey, which, like Greece, is an EU member country. Turkish and Greek armed forces have been conducting war games in the area. Referring to what he called, quote, growing frustration with Turkey, EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell said the sanctions, which include asset freezes and travel ban, could be extended, with Turkish vessels being deprived access to European ports, supplies, and equipment. Economic sanctions are also a possibility. EU leaders will discuss whether to impose the additional measures at a summit in Brussels on September 24th to 25th should Turkey fail to stop what the Europeans consider to be, quote, illegal activities in the eastern Mediterranean. But Turkey said the EU is only making matters worse by brandishing sanctions, and it vowed to defend its rights. Quote, Turkey has to abstain from unilateral actions. This is a basic element to allow the dialogue to advance, Borrell told reporters. Now, here's part of the spat. Turkey doesn't recognize the divided land of Cyprus as a state and claims 44% of Cyprus's exclusive economic zone as its own, according to government officials in Cyprus. Turkish Cypriots and the eastern Mediterranean island nations breakaway north claim another 25%. So essentially, Turkey is claiming these areas of Cyprus that the Greeks and the EU specifically do not recognize that it has. And so there is a scuttle. The EU is fortunately coming to the defense of Greece in this situation. So we'll continue to look at that and to monitor that. So now it is Mission Monday, which is the segment of the show where we talk about either the mission of the church around the world, or we discuss those who have been suffering for their faith, suffering for their activism in defense of human rights. And right now, we're going to talk about someone who is just very bravely standing up to the mullahs in Iran, but she does need prayer because she is deteriorating. Let's go. Let's talk about this. This is from pen.org. Nasrin Sotoudeh, a renowned Iranian writer, human rights lawyer, and activist, is reportedly in critical condition after being on hunger strike in Tehran's Evin prison for over 2 weeks. PEN America today calls for her and other political prisoners' immediate release and for an end to judicial and legal harassment of her and her family. And you can read this full statement. We have it linked up at cgmradio.com. Quote, "We are heartbroken to see Nasrin's health deteriorate day by day while imprisoned on unjust charges in Tehran's notorious Evin prison," said PEN America's Director of Free Expression at Risk Programs, Karen Deutsch Karlikar. Quote, "Nasrin has spent her life advocating for the human rights of Iranians, particularly women. On August 11th, she started her second hunger strike this year to protest the maltreatment of Iranian political prisoners vulnerable to the COVID-19 pandemic, which has ravaged the country's prisons. She is now facing the direst of consequences for her activism and expression. Her life hangs in the balance. We call on the government of Iran to rescind the unjust sentences meted out to Nasrin and other political prisoners. In addition, we call on the authorities to drop all charges against Nasrin's daughter and to end the judicial, financial, and legal harassment of both her and her family." This makes me think of that scripture in the book of John where it says, "Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." And Nasrin Sotoudeh, this Iranian writer, human rights lawyer, activist, is doing that. She's on a second hunger strike protesting the abuses of prisoners, and she's doing this in one of the worst prisons in the world, Iran's notorious Evin prison. So let's pray for Nasrin. Again, this is linked up at cgmradio.com. Check it out. Check out the full statement. Let's be inspired by this person. Let's be inspired as we fight our own battles, spiritual battles, battles here politically against the forces of chaos and destruction, against the forces of tyranny. Let's be inspired by Nasrin Sotoudeh. I believe it was John Adams that said that it's like one of the most important things we can read are books. We should read books of men. We should read books about men as the most, like one of the most important things that we can read. And it's because they inspire us to become better, to become greater, to become more self-sacrificial. And Nasrin is certainly that. All right, that'll do it for today's August 31st, 2020 edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. Thank you for joining us. Make sure to follow me, social media, Twitter, Parler, at World News CGM. Shoot me an email, world@cgmradio.com. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Just type in World News CGM in your favorite podcasting app or visit me online, cgmradio.com/world. You guys have an incredible Monday. We'll see you tomorrow. And may His kingdom come and His will be done on earth as it is in heaven.